Chag Shleishim Yayin. 30 days before Yontif, we prepare for Yontif, and we know we clean our kitchen, our houses. That's one form of preparation. We learn the halachas. We have Divrei Torah for the Chag HaPesach. That's a second form of preparation. And a third, equally as vital and important, as I could tell from the turnout, and I'm sure more are still coming, is to prepare ourselves with understanding, emotionally, spiritually, to be inspired. And I don't think I could think of a better person to do than that Rabbi Friend, as the Olam over here, I'm sure, knows. So there's really not much to introduce, because everyone knows Rabbi Friend, if not personally, visually from seeing him speak, if not visually, and then from hearing on various tapes, whether it was a Sima Shas or some other occasion. So therefore, it's my pleasure to ask Rabbi Friend to speak for us.
Birsus, Dreis Kettle, Bloomberg, Moran, and Rabban, Rav Isai. One speaks, one never knows how it will turn out, how will it be accepted, what kind of impression it will make on the crowd. My hunch tells me that tonight's drasha will in fact be a successful drasha. How do I know that? Because the West Side Kollel has been trying to arrange for me to come for I don't know how long. And this, the one thing after another, things never seem to work out. But so that must mean that the Sutton Lusnisht, Sutton is against me coming to speak here. So from that I can perhaps infer that what I will say tonight will in fact have an impact and make a reshem. You know, Pesach, as we all know, is a yontif that has an abundance of mitzvahs. Perhaps there is no other yontif that has such a confluence of different mitzvahs on one single night. Even Sukkis, some Leil Sukkis, night of Sukkis, there's a mitzvah Yeshiva Sukkah, but there is no mitzvah of Lulav. On Rosh Hashanah, there's a mitzvah Tekiya Shefer, but it's not Naik Balaila. The single mitzvah. But on the night of Pesach, there are so many different mitzvahs for which we have to be mekayim. There's, of course, achilas matzah. There's the mitzvah drabonah of Dalet Kaisis. There's a mitzvah drabonah of Moror. There's a mitzvah sefer yitzias mitzrayim. The list goes on. It's a yontif that really is molei mitzvahs. And I assume that all of us in our minds think before we enter yontif, what's the hardest of the mitzvahs? Perhaps the women think that the hardest mitzvah associated with Pesach is the preparation for Pesach, and it is a daunting task. This past Rosh Chodesh, when they made Rosh Chodesh benching, so somebody asked me next to me, says, "What do you think is more ominous when they are Mavarech Chodesh Elul or Mavarech Chodesh Nisan?" I said, it probably depends whether you're a man or a woman. If you're a woman, Reish Chodesh Nisan Yiyah, those words inspire fear and awe in the hearts of women. Not that women aren't inspired by Elul, but there's something you don't have to go meshuggah cleaning the house for Rosh Hashanah. But of all the mitzvahs that we are knowing on the night of Pesach, I am somewhat embarrassed to admit that the hardest mitzvah for me is none of the above. I have no trouble eating matzah, I have no trouble drinking wine, and I think I'm a kaim sipur yitzias mitzrayim. But for me, the hardest mitzvah is what the Rambam talks about in Hilchos Yontif. Where the Rambam writes in Perek Vov Hilchos Yontif, Shivas Yimei HaPesach, the Shmini Simi HaChag, Yim Shar Yomim Tovim, Kulam Asurim Behesbe Betainis, V'chayev Odom Liyais Behen Sameach V'tayv Leiv. The Rambam writes that there's a mitzvah on all the Yomim Tovim, 7 days of Pesach, 8 days of Sukkot, for a person to be Sameach V'tayv Leiv. for a person to be happy. Hu uvana v'yishtoi b'nei beisei v'chol hanilvin olo. Everyone, let me take this opportunity to ask everyone, please, to shut their cell phone off. So let's do that consciously by taking our cell phone and making sure that it is indeed off. So the Rambam says the person is mechuyev to be happy for 7 days. He and his wife and his children and all the people that are out, that surround him. I don't know how you feel, but I find that mitzvah to be a challenge. To be in a good mood and to be happy for 7 straight days is something that is not, at least for me, it's not something that I find easy. You know, it's a funny thing about simcha and happiness. It's like what the joke they say about the weather. Everyone talks about the weather, but no one does anything about it. Same is with happiness. Everybody wants to be happy, but it's very elusive for people to be happy. People are getting to bad moods. They are depressed. It seems that in spite of the fact that there is this universal desire to be happy, but it seems so elusive. It always struck me that the founding fathers, when they wrote the Declaration of Independence, they wrote that this country is founded for the right for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And all of us can imagine and can relate to the fact that life and liberty are fundamental conditions for a human being, but that they listed in that category of life and liberty the pursuit of happiness always struck me as strange. Now, I know that one's not supposed to make diyukim from the founding fathers, but nevertheless, it says something about humanity, it says something about people, that they view the importance of being happy as so fundamental that it's ranked up there with life and liberty itself. Which got me thinking. What's the Torah's perspective on happiness? If we were to write our own Declaration of Independence, would we in fact list the pursuit of happiness as such a fundamental need that we would rank it together with life and liberty itself? What's the Hashkafas HaTorah on the importance of being happy? So, in order to try to determine this, let's try to define what exactly happiness is and what simcha is. And it is a terminology that's not easily definable. If you look up in the dictionary the definitions of the word happiness, you'll see that the definitions somehow don't do it justice. The dictionary lists happiness, the definition of happiness, as cheerful, joy, bliss, contentment. None of those definitions do simcha justice. Simcha is much more profound than being joyful or being in a state of bliss. So whenever I find that something is difficult to define, I try to define it by what it is not. And maybe by ruling out what it is not, then we can kind of understand what indeed that it is. Simcha and happiness cannot be defined as having fun. Simcha and happiness is a much more sublime characteristic and state than merely having fun. Don't get me wrong. I like fun as much as the next guy. And I know there's such a thing as having a good time. I'm not against it. But to think that is simcha and having a nice time, whatever you define as having a nice time, that really doesn't do it justice. Nor can we define happiness as pleasure seeking, Because if the definition of happiness would be fun and pleasure seeking, then it would stand to reason that the people that inhabit Hollywood would be the happiest people in the world. And as a bunch, you've never seen a more miserable group of people than the people that inhabit Hollywood, in spite of the fact that they seemingly have all the fun that that person could want, and they have all of the life's pleasures that any human being could desire. So it is not fun, and it is not having pleasure. Let's take that definition that the dictionary says as bliss, being in a state of bliss, being in a state when there are no tensions, when there are no challenges, when there are no stresses, when there are no aggravations. Bliss. Now, what I just mentioned to you is my definition of a good vacation. Sitting somewhere on a beach where there's no phone calls, there's no aggravation, there's no agmas nefesh, there's no stress, just sitting there on a beach and drinking pina coladas. Now, that may be a state of bliss, a state of peaceful relaxation, but that's not what happiness is either. Because we have to realize something. We live lives that are full of tension, and full of aggravation, and full of challenges, and full of agmas nefesh. And nevertheless, we can be happy. And matter of fact, in order for a person to have a meaningful life, a life in which he grows, he has to have the challenges that life presents to human beings. You know, Dr. Abraham Twersky, the psychiatrist, says over the following story. He was sitting in a doctor's office, and he had nothing else to read, so he picked up a magazine, and he started reading an article called How Do Lobsters Grow? Now, a person like Rabbi Twersky, Rabbi Dr. Twersky, really would not find that much interest in how do lobsters grow. Matter of fact, I don't think there's anybody in this entire room that cares a hoot about how lobsters grow. And yet, in this article about how lobsters grow, Dr. Twersky saw a tremendous Musar Haskel. And that is as follows. What's the problem with lobsters? Why can't they grow like every other animal grows? The problem is that lobsters, if you've ever seen a lobster in your life, lobsters have this hard shell. So when this little baby lobster is born, so it's confined by this hard shell. So when the little lobster tries to get bigger, it feels itself confined and gequetched and restrained by this hard shell. So Ebaze Frektach Lakasha, how taka do lobsters grow? The answer to that is that when the lobster feels confined and feels gequetched and feels restrained, the lobster goes to the bottom of the ocean, it finds a rock, it hides under the rock, it sheds its shell, it stays there under the rock because now it has lost its protection from predators, it grows a new shell, and then it comes out from under the rock. The lobster repeats this several times in the course of its lifetime until it becomes a mature lobster. Says Dr. Twersky, the psychiatrist, it's a good thing that lobsters don't have lobster psychiatrists. Because if lobsters had psychiatrists, the lobster, when it felt this confining, this restraint, this pressure, it would go to the lobster psychiatrist. He would prescribe Valium. The lobster would space out. He would feel relaxed, and he would never ever grow. So they, thank God, don't have psychiatrists. The lesson that Dr. Twersky learned from this, and this is a lesson that we should all realize, and that is that we grow by the challenges and the aggravations and the stresses that life presents us. And if we don't have any challenges, we're just in this state of euphoria or this catatonic state that we never ever have to deal with the pressures, then we don't grow. Rav Sham Shmuel Nepal Hirsch points out, Kedarka Bakedesh, that the word for Hebrew for happy is Sameach, and the word in Hiloshen Kodesh to grow is Sameach. 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 There is a relationship between Sameach and Sameach. In order to be Sameach, a person has to be Sameach. In order for a person to be happy, to have a sense of fulfillment, there must be growth. The only way there's growth is through challenges. So to think that happiness is bliss, that happiness is sitting in a state where a person doesn't have to worry about anything, he has no challenges, he has no questions, he has no sorrows, and therefore a person can be happy, is a fallacy. It's wrong. A person can have all the challenges of life, and nevertheless he can still be happy. So if happiness is not fun, and happiness is not pleasure, and happiness is not bliss and contentment, then what exactly is Simcha supposed to be? And in order to answer that question, I'd like to share with you two morals. The first moral is, the moral writes, Ki hasimcha shayeches el hanefesh hanizdeles. Simcha is an emotion that has to do with the neshama, with the nefesh. Simcha has nothing to do with the goof, with the body. Fun, pleasure, that has to do with the body. But simcha shayeches el hanefesh hanizdeles. That's why the Maral writes, behemoths cannot have simcha. Because behemoths, even if they have a form of neshama, which the Rishonim talk about, but they don't have a fully developed neshama, they don't have a nefesh. And if they don't have a nefesh, they can't be happy. Animals can have emotions. The Ramban writes, by the mitzvah Shiluach HaKein, that there are emotions that animals can have. There are maternal instincts that animals can have. Animals can have fear. There are basic emotions that animals can experience. But there's one type of emotion that animals can experience, and that's simcha. Ki ha-simcha shayeches el ha-nefesh ha-nivdeles. And that is a profound truth. Because that tells us that the only way we'll ever experience simcha is if we do something that touches our nefesh and our neshama. And you can have all the fun in the world, you can have all the pleasure in the world, but if you don't do something that touches your soul, you're not going to be happy. Think about it. Where are the days in your life that you experienced simcha, that you were truly happy? The day you had a child, when you have a son that's bar mitzvah, when you can take a daughter down to the chuppah, those are days that people are happy, because those are days that touch your soul. Because having a baby is hemshech hadayrus. Because bringing child to a chuppah is weiter hemshech haderes. It's something that affects your neshama. And that's the only way you'll ever be happy. And therefore, the great lie, the great myth, is Western civilization's idea by the accumulation of things, of material things, you'll be happy. It's a sheker. It's from the biggest shkorim that have been hoisted on humanity. That's never going to make you happy. Because having the brand new car or the dream vacation or whatever it may be, that doesn't touch your soul. That doesn't not shayach ha-nefesh ha-nidela. So you're looking for the elusive pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. It doesn't exist. Yasimcha shayeches or on Nefesh HaNivdelis. That's why the Rambam, who does not engage in dramatics and hyperbole, the famous Rambam at the end of Hilchas Megillah, when the Rambam writes, Mutav lorem laharbis mamatonos evgenim laharbis besudasi vishloach molis l'reyehu. The bigger mitzvah to give matanos levyanim than it is shalach manis. Now listen to the Lashon HaRambam. Shein sham simcha gedoyla umufu'ora. There is no greater simcha. Ela l'sameach lev ha'aniyim v'ha'yusayimim v'almanis v'geirim. There is no greater simcha. Shein sham simcha gedoyla umufu'ora. Ela l'sameach lev ha'aniyim v'ha'yulolim halolim. You know why? Shehamisameach leiv homlolim halolu is a person that brings simcha to these unfortunate people of society. Doimel l'shchina. He becomes godlike. Because the Ribbono shel Olam is a misameach leiv homlolim. And therefore, when you emulate the Ribbono shel Olam, you're doing something that touches your soul, your neshama, because your neshama once again feels connected to the Kisei HaKavod from which it came, and therefore you've touched your soul, and that brings you simcha. And that is why the aforementioned Rambam in Hilchas Yontif writes, how you mekayim simchas Yontif. Zok the Rambam, children you give toys to, women you buy clothes and jewelry for, men eat basar v'yayin. But says the Rambam, Zok the Rambam, ukeshuhu oichel v'sheiseh, chayiv lahachil, lager, layosim v'lamona, im shor anuim hamlolu, avon misha noyel dalseis chatzeroi. Zok the Rambam, if you think that having a gishmak meal, good meat and good wine, that's going to bring you simcha. Zok the Rambam, ein ze ela simchas kresai. It's another good meal. It's another good meal in a New York restaurant. It's gewalding. We don't have it in Baltimore. But it doesn't bring you simcha. So you're satisfied, you're gishmak. I like a steak as much as the other fella. But it doesn't bring you simcha. But when you have amonis and yisayimim and gerim and the less fortunate at your table, and you eat together with them, that's a simcha. Because that's an achila that touches your soul. Shahasimcha shayeches el hanefesh hanidelas. That's moral number one. The other moral is a little more sublime. Maral writes in the Nesiv HaSayim, in the Nesiv HaTayra, Ki HaSimcha Hi Mitzad HaShleimus. The emotion of Simcha has to do with the sense of Shleimus, a sense of completion. Vasher Yesh Le Shleimus Hu Sameach. When you sense a sense of completeness, of shleimus, then you're happy. Zok the Maral. What is the polar opposite of simcha? The polar opposite of simcha is avelus. Why? Zok the Maral, because when a person, Rachmana Lassan, is an ovel, so he's chaser, he's lacking, he feels a chisaron. When you feel a chisaron, then you're not besimcha. When you feel shalem, then you are besimcha. That's why the Maral writes, Pikudei Hashem Yishorim Misamche Leiv. Because when you sit and you learn Torah and you sit by a blot of Gemara, so you feel dovek to the Ribbono Shel Olam.
because I'm connected. I feel the shayachus with the Ribbono Shel Olam because Pikud Hashem Nisar Misan Chalev Yisrael by rights of the Kutcha Bricha Chadu. This is the Dvar Hashem. Omer Rachmona, not the Torah, it's the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the biggest shayachus that a yid can have in this world. So when he has that shayachus, when he's sitting there, there's a sense of shleimus. When there's a sense of shleimus, there's a sense of simcha. Now I'll tell you something. And this is the truth. This is the rain and this. You all want to be happy? I'll tell you how we can all be happy. Be mizdabik to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Feel this constant shaykhus to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Guaranteed. You'll be happy. I'm guaranteed. That explains to me why you see sometimes these Yidden Yushalayim, these holy Jews, they have next to nothing. And they live from hand to mouth. They have a living room, which is a dining room, which is a kitchen, which is a bedroom, two bedrooms, one for all the children, and one for him and his wife. And they're besimcha. They never get to bad moods. How is that? It doesn't take much to get me into a bad mood. What's the difference between me and these guys in Yerushalayim? You know, the smallest thing can get me into a bad mood. You know, my wife sends me shopping. That doesn't get me in a bad mood yet. But she's making a recipe. She has a whole list. She says, I need the margarine and the confectioner's sugar. If not, the recipe geht nicht. So I go to the supermarket and I buy the entire list. And I come home and we start unpacking the groceries. And she says, where is the confectioner's sugar? Don't worry, it's here. I bought it. I promise you I bought it. We have more bags. Where is the margarine? I told you, the thing I need is the confectioner's sugar and the margarine. Where are they? I said, I bought them. I promise you, I bought them. Go through every bag. They're not there. I know exactly where they are. They're sitting on the counter, at the checkout counter, at the supermarket. That's where they are. Back down Reisestown Road. Back into 7 Mile Market. This puts me in a bad mood. So what, the Yidden Yerushalayim never has to go shopping for his wife? Or he never forgets the margarine? Or he never misses the train? Or he never gets a flat tire? Or all the myriad things that put me into a bad mood? The Teretz is that Yid feels dovek to the Ribbono Shel Olam 24/7. And I, in spite of the fact that I spend most of my day in a Beis Midrash, I can't say that. And therefore I'm not the simcha always. An event can put me into a bad mood. But if we were able to constantly feel the shaykhis to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I guarantee you we would all be happy because we would all have the sense of shleimus. I have a rule. I never preach to others, which I'm not shy to myself. So what are we going to do in the meantime? To merely tell you and say, feel shaykhis to the Ribbono Shel Olam. You'll always be happy. For most of us, it's not going to do it. So I have a suggestion. A suggestion that I think will make us happier. Not necessarily always happy, but I can almost guarantee happier. And that is,
by concentrating on that which we have rather than that which we don't. Now that may seem simple and Pollyannish, but it's the reina emes. The more we realize how much we have, the happier we will be. Let me share with you a Gemara. The Gemara says in Brachos, Omrele Rabbana Lorav Hamun Azuki Bihilul Demar Bereid Ravina. The Gemara says in Brachos that the Rabbanan told Rav Hamnuna, thank you. The Gemara says that the Rabbanan told Rav Hamnuna at a chasana, the Hilul is a mar breeder of Ravina. Lishri lon mar. They told Rav Hamnuna Zuta, go up and say a nigin. Sing a nigin. Bimisamea chosin vikala. Rav Hamnuna gets up, and this is the nigin that he sang. Omar wahu, vai lon the misnon, vai lon the misnon. We're all gonna die. We're all gonna die. This is a Gemara. Gets up. Misamea chosin vikala. Zog a nigin. Vai lon the misnon. Woe to us. We're all going to die. The next time they ask you to speak at a Sheva, brothers, do not try this. What's the pshat, Miss Gemara? Say once or someone say pshat, Miss Gemara. What's this Gemara saying? This Gemara saying, says Rav Hamnunas gets up and he says, Rav Leisai, we're a chasana. We all want to be happy. You know how to start to be happy? Think, look where we are. We're alive. But we're not always going to be alive. There's going to come a day we're going to die. You just can't jump into Simchas Chasim Bekala. You have to work yourself up to that Madrega. And you know how you work yourself up to the Madrega of being the Sameach Chasim Bekala? You realize what it is to be in a Chasana. That number one, we're alive. And don't take life for granted. Because one day we're going to die. And we were able to come to this Chasana. And walk to the Chasana. And eat at the Chasana. And we're alive and we're well. And we have life. That's how we're going to get into this Simcha. That's how we're going to get into this Chasana. Experience the Chasana in its context. And realize that first and foremost, life in itself is precious. And don't take it for granted. The reason we go to chasanas, and it just seems to us, it's almost a burden. We just go and we eat, say mazel tov. We don't realize what it is. What a chasan is. What life is. I want to tell you about a chasana that I went to a little over a year ago. It was one of the most lebedik, if it's the most lebedik chasana I ever attended. I have a chaver which I have known in the yeshiva for more than 40 years. About 20 years ago, this chaver of mine who lived across the hall from me for 17 years and now lives across the street from me for the last 17 years, 16 years. So one Chol HaMoed Sukkot, his daughter had a baby girl. But the baby was born without the optic nerve. The baby was blind from birth. There's no therapy in the world that can help her. The base of la de law. She doesn't even have an optic nerve. These people did a mashunadik job of raising this daughter. There's a fully functioning girl. A girl that went to Beis Yaakov of Baltimore. A girl that went by herself to seminary in Eretz Yisrael, blind. But no one ever believed that she would ever get married. And if she would get married, who on earth would marry her? And lo and behold, more than a year ago, this girl got engaged to a regular guy. Obviously not a regular guy, but a regular person. That chasana by side was a chasana which you'll never attend. When they talk about how parents bring the daughter down to the chuppah, this was literal, not figurative. They have to march her down to the chuppah. Whether you were invited to that chasana or not, you came to that chasana. And I can tell you, I know people that I've known for more than 40 years, never saw them shed a tear in my life. If you weren't crying at that chuppah, you didn't have a pulse. And it was mamish, it was like Huri Moshe Aira. The dancing, the frames. It was beyond anything I'd ever seen. Why? Because a blind girl to go to the chuppah. That's mashal. That's extraordinary. But what we don't realize is that every chassan is like that. And to be able to bring a healthy child to the chuppah, to raise a healthy child, we don't appreciate that. We take it for granted. And that's the chiddush of Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna says, Rabbeisai, we're on a chasana. Do you know what that means? We're all going to die one day. We're alive. Be happy. We're well. We can eat. We can dance. We can sing. Be happy. Vaylanda Misnan. This is the great challenge for all of us. Appreciating everything that we have in life. Chazal knew this. So he told us in the morning, you get up, you open your eyes, you know what you say, Maidani Lefanecha. You know, some thank God I'm alive. That's what the Birchas HaShachar are all about. Baruch Atah Hashem, Pekeach Ivrim. I can see. Don't take it for granted. Baruch Atah Hashem, Hamechi Mitzadei Gover. You can walk. Have you ever broken your leg? I know someone who broke their leg. And going to the bathroom in the morning is a major undertaking. We can put both feet on the ground and walk yourself. You're way ahead of the game. Chazal knew that the word shchiach, which means common, which means matzui, Shchiach, and the word shachach are related. Because the more something, the more shkiach things are, the more we tend to forget about them. There is a secret to happiness, and it's called gratitude. Grateful people are happy people. Ungrateful people are not happy people. Just think about it for a minute. In your circle of friends and acquaintances, think about the happy people. The people are always satisfied. The people that everything seems to be all right. They have their sorrows, but they always seem to be positive. They're grateful. The grateful people are happy people. And ungrateful people are not happy people. That's the formula. To be happy, you have to have a sense of shleimus. To achieve a sense of shleimus, you have to be grateful and realize what you have. And the more you realize what you have, the happier you will be. And nothing undermines happiness as much as expectations. Expectations are the great enemy of gratitude, of happiness. When you expect something, you're not grateful. When you're not grateful, you're not happy. Let me ask you a question. Do your husbands bring you home flowers on Erev Shabbos? A couple people nodded their head. Thank God. When your husband brings you home flowers on Erev Shabbos, do you wax ecstatic? Do you say, "My goodness, flowers, how thoughtful, how kind, how sensitive you are to bring me flowers"? If you're like most women, you'll say, "I'm busy now, put the flowers down, I'll get to them later." The same husband brings you home flowers on a plain Wednesday. "Mamish! Oh, honey, you are so sweet. The Zelba flowers. And you didn't even have a fight. And he's still bringing you flowers. Why? Ma bein flowers on Wednesdays, the flowers on Erev Shabbos." The answer is, you expect the flowers. You expect the flowers, you're not grateful. You're not grateful, no big deal. The way it is with life. The more you expect, the less grateful you are. The less grateful you are, the less happy you are. Let me tell you a story about expectations. This is the most amazing story that ever happened to me in terms of a guy coming over and telling me a story. I was in Stamford, Connecticut a year and 3 weeks ago. How do I know the youth when it was? I was at a Hever Kadisha dinner in Stamford, Connecticut. Fellow comes up to me and he says, "Rabbi Fran, can I have a word with you in private?" I said, "Fine." Step aside. "Hello, my name is Stanley Berger from Stamford, Connecticut. I want to tell you, Rabbi Fran, I like your books. I love your tapes. etc., etc., and I know that there is a but at the end of this sentence. But I don't like what you wrote in Parshas Lech Lecha. So I say to him, Mr. Berger, I know you're going to be profoundly disappointed, but I do not remember what I wrote. So he says, you remember the vort? He starts telling me over the vort, and he says, you remember the maisa that we said with that vort? And I actually remembered. I remembered this, the piece, because the story that I said over in that piece isn't itself a fantastic story. And I remembered it. So I said, I'll tell you what the story is. I won't tell you what the word, I'll tell you what the story is. The story is like, this is a true story, it's a documented story. Dr. Yaffa Eliach, in her book, Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust, documents this story. This is a Maisa Shehoyah. This came above a Maisa. In 1942, in the Krakow ghetto, there was a couple named Hiller. They had a little boy. His name was Shachna. They saw the handwriting on the wall. They didn't know what's going to be with them. In the middle of the night, they take their little boy. They take him out. They take him to a Polish couple, a couple that has no children. And they say to the couple as follows, listen, this is our little boy. If we survive this war, we're going to come back and we're going to get this, our child. But if, God forbid, we don't survive this war, we want, here's the name and address of an uncle and aunt that live in Washington, D.C. We want you to get in touch with this couple. We want you to send our little boy back to his family. He should be raised a Jew. They give over the child. Unfortunately, Mr. and Mrs. Hiller did not ever live. They perished in the Holocaust. This Polish couple raised this little boy as a good little Catholic. They were observant Catholics. They went to Mass every Sunday. They took him with. He learned the whole liturgy. When the child was about 10 or 11 years old, this little boy was 10 or 11 years old, the mother takes this little boy to the parish priest and says, we want you to baptize him. So the priest looks at them and says, you know, looks at her and says, you know, this kid is 10 years old, where have you been until now? So the mother, she hems, she haws, she doesn't want to say the truth. Finally, he gets it out of her. She tells him the story. This was a Jewish little boy. His parents perished. And now we raised him as a good little boy, good old Catholic. We want now him to be baptized. The parish priest says, no, not right. He was born a Jew, he was entrusted to you. What you have to do is get him back to his family in Washington, D.C. That's the right thing to do. That parish priest's name was Karo Wojtyla. He became Pope John Paul II. But the Blujeva Rebbe Zechatzadik Livracha said something that a person like that can say, that it was the Ribbono Shel'olam gave this parish priest his schar ba'olam hazeh for the act that he did of returning this boy to his faith, and therefore he achieved the greatest honor that any Catholic can achieve. He became the Pope. Ad kan the Maisa. So I say to him, so what's the problem? So he looks at me and he says, I'm the boy. I'm the boy. So after I get up from the ground, I say to him, wait a minute.
your name is Stanley Berger. This guy's name, this kid's shocked. They, yeah, my uncle aunt, their name was Berger. They adopted me. They changed my name to Berger. Stanley shocked and became Stanley. An Orthodox Jew. So I say to him, so what's the problem? He says, I don't like the way you wrote about this Polish couple. So I'm trying to think, what did I say about them? So I said to him, I said, Mr. Berger, you'll pardon me, but I don't remember exactly what I wrote about this couple. He takes out of his pocket, photostat of the page, highlighted in yellow, and he said, this is what you said. And I read the sentence, and the sentence says, his parents' trust in them was misplaced. So I say to him, Mr. Berger, I still don't understand. Your parents' trust in them was misplaced. They were supposed to give you back to your uncle and aunt. They didn't. If they would have had their way, you'd today be a Catholic. It's only because of Carol O'Teal that they're standing here today. It was misplaced. What's the problem? And he looks at me and he says, Rabbi Friend, you don't understand. He says, these people risked their life for me. If they would have been caught harboring a Jewish child, they would have been shot. And all you can say is his parents' trust in them was misplaced. I said to him, Mr. Berger, I apologize. You and I are coming from different perspectives. I'm looking at this as a dispassionate third party, and all I see is the facts in front of me, and they didn't do what they were asked to do. But you were the beneficiary of their goodness, of their kindness, and to you these people risked their life for you, and therefore you feel differently than I do. So I'm taking the train back to Baltimore, and I'm thinking to myself, did I just meet some kind of tzaddik yisoid olam in Stanley Berger? Did I know children that have no problem whatsoever criticizing their parents? And I certainly know children that hear criticism about their parents all the time, and they don't go and complain that, how can you talk that way about my parents? And Stanley Berger takes umbrage and offense at the fact that I said one sentence about these people. Ma bein Stanley Berger l'chol ha'olam kula. The answer is because Stanley Berger realized he had nothing to expect from these people. These people did not have to do this. And therefore there were no expectations. And there were no expectations, there is a tremendous amount of gratitude. And when there's gratitude, there's happiness. But most of us expect everything from our parents. After all, they are our parents. They owe us. They're mechuyev to get up in the morning for the first 3 years of life. And they're mechuyev to go ahead and to raise you and to educate you, to spend money on you, and to marry you off, and to buy you a house, mechuyev, and the list goes on.
After all, that's what parents are supposed to do. So there are expectations. And when there are expectations, there isn't gratitude. And that's why perhaps we live in a society that is so miserable and so unhappy, because we've been raised to expect everything, to think that everything is coming to us. So, if we were to rewrite our Constitution and our Declaration of Independence, would we write the words life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Is that a Yiddish ideal? I think that we would have to phrase it life, liberty, and the pursuit of shlemus. The pursuit, the byproduct of shlemus, of a sense of shlemus, is happiness. That's not the goal in and of itself. The goal is to become a sholem. The goal is to be mizdabik with the Ribbono Shel Olam. The goal is to feel the sense of shlemus. The byproduct of that will be happiness. And therefore, as we approach this Yontif of Pesach, in which the Rambam tells us, Chayavodim liyei sameach b'tayv leiv, the way to accomplish that is to make this Pesach, and include in this Pesach, something that touches our neshamas. There has to be some aspect of l'sameach leiv hoim lolim halolu. There has to be some aspect of ruchnius that permeates our yontif. It can't just be knedlach and gishmak of desserts. It has to be something ruchni. It has to be make others that are less fortunate happy. There has to be ruchnius, there has to be something that touches our neshamas. There has to be a sense of gratitude, of realizing all that we have, how wonderful our lives are. I'm old enough and mature enough to know that, for the most part, nobody's life is perfect. But nevertheless, there's so much goodness in our life, in spite of the problems that we have. When we concentrate on what we have, we're grateful for what we have, then we will be happier people. We can perhaps approach what the Rama asks from us, what the Halacha demands from us. Good night.
Everybody gets on.